TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, you had that sharp command red on when we started the first part of this discussion, but I see you've traded that for a bath towel.
Well, it's just so much more comfortable, Chris. I'm sorry, but between recordings, I needed to take a quick massage. I've got a really nice guy here. He does great massages. In fact, I don't think he's gone far. You should try him.
I bet Jadzia set you up with that, didn't she?
She absolutely did.
So this is the second part of our discussion of The Way of the Warrior. And last time we talked mainly about Klingons, and we're getting ready to dive into some of the insidious nature of the changelings and the Founder's infiltration of the Alpha Quadrant and all. But yeah, Matthew, maybe before we do that, I think sometimes maybe Kira thinks that Jadzia's being a little insidious and how she really wants her to loosen up and have fun and maybe just grow her character a little bit more.
Yeah, I love this. You know, one of the things that was so much fun about this was the fact that we were growing the characters in these moments. And I do think that, you know, Jadzia is trying to help Kira realize that you do not have to be serious all the time. You can enjoy yourself. And, you know, it's obviously something that was and is difficult for Kira to do because of how she grew up. She didn't have a use for imagination. Her life was, you know, a living hell. And so I think I really appreciated this moment for them. And in many ways too, this whole scene, let's not beat around the bush, is really what a lot of people think of what you would do in the holodeck, which is have right. sexy time. I mean, that's kind of what they end up doing. And so they allude to that. And at the same time, this is, again, it's a moment between two characters that's helping them grow as friends. But it's also about kind of helping one character kind of loosen up. And what's beautiful about it is season four is really the season to which we really kind of start rounding off some of Kira's sharper edges, and not in a bad way, but we're just making her a more rounded character by allowing her to understand and experience things to which she never thought she would experience. And really, in many ways, to finally allow her to experience the life she had spent her entire life fighting for, which I think is kind of great.
Right. Yeah, we round off those sharp edges, as you describe it, to make the character richer. They never weaken Kira. If anything, she becomes stronger as a leader through the end of the series, and her role is pivotal at the end. But she learns to refine the traits, the characteristics, the things that the way that she grew up because of the Cardassian occupation and having to be a freedom fighter for her people and all. And that kind of anger and impatience and animosity that boils to the surface often in the early seasons of DS9, especially, you know, it's very evident in the opening scenes of Emissary. But she's learning to live with that, and Jadzia is helping her find another side of life and bring the two together. And I think Jadzia is a great character to do that because, first of all, their relative ages as women on the station works well together. They're both part of the command crew, so they spend time together. But also Jadzia is actually very old and very wise and has all this experience. And so I think that she's an ideal character to help Kira understand these things and to grow, I guess is what I would say, in life. She's a counselor at Cisco, and here she's kind of a counselor to Kira as well in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way you put that because I think it's really interesting. Jadzia is a young woman, but at the same time, she's also an old soul. And both of those things are exactly what Kira needs to be able to have the perspective to be able to grow. And again, to be able to say, you can loosen up from time to time. You can have fun. You can just enjoy life. That's okay.
And then you mentioned the overall scene and it being sexy time. And I think that, you know, these days this scene would, no one would pay any attention to it on a TV show. There's nothing really racy about it, not to me. But this was 1995. And at that point in time, I think this is a case of Star Trek kind of pushing forward a little bit and putting the situation on the screen within the context of a show like this. And it was more noticeable. It stood out more in 1995, especially where I lived at the time when I was growing up in Alabama. These kinds of things were, sometimes
frowned upon. You know, I mean, they're in a massage parlor. Talking about getting exercise, and they're not talking about exercise, you know. So, again, what I think it's great, like you were mentioning and we've been talking about, though, is that really the scene is about taking a character and growing them in a way that is going to help make them a more fully fledged person. And that's a great opportunity. And I think it's one of the things that kind of helps Kira grow throughout the rest of the series. We really do see her make a change and a shift throughout the fourth season and beyond to being somebody who isn't just about yelling in people's faces and stuff, you know? So I really appreciate it. And I mean, you know, speaking of relationships, one of the other things I think we see here too, like in the first episode opens with this and it continues throughout this entire two-parter, is that we see Bashir and O'Brien have fallen into a really nice routine together as friends. And so that whole third season, they really grew into this beautiful friendship and now they're reaping the rewards of it. And I mean, you know, they're ribbing each other and playing darts together and that kind of stuff. But I think it's small in this two-parter, but we're actually getting to see them reap the benefits of the hard work that they've kind of put into this relationship, from the beginning of the series, where O'Brien couldn't stand Bashir and many fans couldn't stand Bashir. And I think this is also a place where season four marks it's actually a demarcation line for the character of where I think people start looking at Bashir as a completely different type of character and really start gravitating towards him as somebody that they want to spend more time with on the show.
Yeah. There is a good shift there for him. And this is also where the Battle of Britain between the two of them, you know, the holosuite stuff they do is introduced. Yeah. And then throughout the series, they do these types of things together. Which is wonderful. You know, that, what we just talked about right there, plus the Kira Jadzia thing, is one thing I appreciate about this episode, is that even though the big part of the episode is bringing back the Klingons, bringing Worf into the show, the Dominion threat, the conflict between the Federation and the Klingons, we get the big battle at the end. With all this going on, they still take the time to have these little scenes particularly the one with Jadzia and Kira, which is purely character development for the long term, has nothing really to do with this immediate story, but they're just building the characters over time so that the characters become richer. And they actually take the time to do that, even though they could easily have spent that time on some additional action sequence or something like that. But instead, they have two characters talking to each other about something that's about their own personal lives and how they feel. And it isn't, you know, just for the sake of action. And that scene in the bath got cut, actually, when they split this into two parts for the rerun broadcast, where they have to, has to be a 1 hour thing. So unfortunately that did get cut there, but of course it's there in the primary, the original 2 hour run. And I'm glad that they take the time to do that. And yeah, there's another scene with Bashir and O'Brien where Quark is talking about how quiet the Klingons are. That was cut when it was split into two parts. And the scene where Quark wants to protect his bar from the Klingons, and then he and Odo go in and he opens the box. He's going to protect himself with his disruptor pistol. And there's the note from Rom. Yeah, use some parts from your gun. You know, it's like that was cut. So those three scenes were cut. And those are all good character moments. But anyway, at least in the original, they took the time to do that. Let's talk about what we were mentioning in terms of the insidious nature of the story, because I do want to talk about the founders a bit and this changeling threat, Dominion threat, which is what has everybody on edge in the first place. And what I find interesting also about the storytelling here is that you feel as the viewer all the time that this Dominion threat is there. It's like something lurking in the shadows. You don't know where it's going to pop up, but you can feel it. And yet, unless you count Martok, which we discussed last time, we don't see any changelings, but the threat is there. So, and the Klingons, at least they say this is the reason they want to invade Cardassia, because they believe that that will help them protect the Alpha Quadrant from the Dominion. So it's this fear of the Dominion that's driving their behavior in the first place, which sets off the chain reaction, which leads to the dissolution of the Kittimer Accords and so forth. So what are your thoughts on how they tell the story of the Founders here?
Yeah, I think it is really interesting that, I mean, it's just so smart for the Founders to target the Klingons, because they're an easy target. And they're an easy target to wind up and really to get them to think and to do what you want them to do by just giving them a little bit of evidence. And they're going to be the race in the Alpha Quadrant that just immediately kind of jumps to action if there's even the 1% possibility that there's a threat. And then they, to quote Batman v Superman, you know, if there's a 1% possibility, we have to take it as an absolute certainty. That's the Klingons, right? You know?
And right, yeah.
I think there's the beauty of this is that I think the Deep Space Nine writers understood what races to use. And we had, you know, mentioned in the previous episode about the idea of like with the Vulcans and everything. And none of that, I think, would have had the same type of impact. And this truly helps to stabilize the Alpha Quadrant, because you're creating these races going at each other, and you're creating so much chaos and you're creating so much death, honestly. And mm-hmm. I think it really works. I think it's just they chose correctly, you know, as Indiana Jones, you know, the Last Crusade, they chose wisely.
Yeah, I think the Founders are an interesting threat because they are always lurking, and it was smart to start this episode the way that they started it, with them searching the station for a changeling. Because you really think, it, as the viewer at the beginning, that maybe the changelings are on the station because of how the previous season ended, things ended there. And you think that, wow, they're really looking for someone. And then you find out, oh, it's a drill. And it took them, they were searching for over 3 hours. And they still didn't find Odo until he pops up behind Bashir, right? So that alone, like knowing the nature of the changelings and how you never know where they are, who they could be, Martok coming aboard, them cutting their wrists to find out if they are changelings or not, helps set that up as well. And just to set up this fear. And it sort of plays into the original idea when they wanted to do changelings on Earth for season 4. So they're not doing changelings on Earth, but they are still doing changelings somewhere, right? So the kind of the premise of, oh, we don't know where they are, is mm-hmm. still there.
Well, and the beauty of this is that right now, we don't even know if there are any changelings at all. And I think that's the greatness of this, is that without even having changelings that we know are actually in the Alpha Quadrant or the Beta Quadrants, we're destabilizing everything. Like, I mm-hmm. think that's really, really beautiful. And it's really, really smart.
Well, that's how the world works, right? It's the fear of the unknown can easily destabilize society. You get groups who they don't know for sure, of course, if something is real or not, but they're so certain that it must be, or that the threat is there, that it leads to irrational behavior and destabilizes relationships, destabilizes society as a whole. And that's exactly what we're seeing play out here.
Yeah. Well, and the beauty of it is that it's something that's so smart, and I think, you know, it's just as relevant now as when this show, probably more so when this came out. It actually is more relevant. Is
more
that
so,
way
I would say.
In which fear is used to make people react a certain way. And fear of nebulousness, like the possibility of something happening, and like, we're talking like the minuscule possibility of something, like so minuscule. It just blows my mind, you know? And so I think that's what I love about Deep Space Nine. And rewatching this episode, I was just so struck by how this still applies completely. And the way the founders are acting and hoping people react are the same way we see people in power all over the place, getting people to react by just, you know, continually putting out fear porn.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, it's human nature. And the thing here with the Klingons is that they just want an excuse to do something they want to do in the first place. You know, they want to fight. They want to conquer. And Worf says this in the episode. He tells Sisko that, you know, this situation has just given my people an excuse to do what they were born to do, which is to fight and conquer. And so the Klingons are looking for an excuse to do that in the first place. And then this threat is that perfect excuse.
Yeah.
And allows them to act out in a way that they've been keeping suppressed, but they really want to do this. And you know, that's what fear of the unknown does in the real world. Of course, some people want to lash out at others, or some people want to, you look what's happening here where I am, close the borders, lock out the world, because of they want to do that, and they've been given the perfect excuse to do it in the current situation with the pandemic. So that's how it is. And of course, those are choices. And you talk about the choice of the writers to use certain races. So let's talk about other choices that we see in this episode. And a big one is, do we support our allies? Or do we, I guess the word would be, betray our allies for what we think would be more beneficial for the greater good. You know, the Federation has to decide here, do we warn the Cardassians that the Klingons are coming?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we honor the fact that at this moment in time, we're still allies?
Yes. Well, I love the struggle here of trying to figure out what is the right thing to do, because it would seem in many ways that the wrong thing to do would be to betray your allies, right? But what if what your allies are doing is based off of no evidence whatsoever and you would consider wrong? And so there is this direct tension between the choices that Sisko is having to make out here on the fly of, okay, do we start a war basically with the Klingons, or do we cause the end of the Khitomer cords because of this? And I think the beauty of it is, and of course what we see here is that they stand up and they choose to do what is right regardless of the cost, because it's the right thing to do. And there are no founders on Cardassia. In fact, the only founders are ones in the Klingon Empire. We just don't know that yet, right?
Right.
And
right.
I think, so there is this real beauty to kind of seeing these characters wrestle with these choices and what to do and when to do it. And I think, you know, it's a no-win scenario, but I think the choice that we see Sisko make is the choice that lets other people know, in the end, we're going to do what's right. And so you can stand with us where we choose to do what is right, even if it costs us friends, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's what you want from your hero characters. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I love that. But I also love the struggle it is for Sisko to make this decision, because he knows what it could cost the Alpha Quadrant. We could thrust the entire Alpha Quadrant into war because of one choice. But in the end, it's not Sisko's fault, because it's the Klingons' fault here for not listening to any reason and making the choices that they're making. So.
Right. But we cannot expect Klingons to listen to reason, Matthew.
Well, I mean, I know. How dumb of me. So stupid.
That would be
of me.
Very out of character for them to listen to reason. Although Martok is a Klingon who eventually will listen to reason.
Yes. Yes.
Gowron is not a character who will listen to reason. And Klingons overall, the High Council, I don't think would listen to reason. The situation of whether to warn them or not is interesting, though, because you can take the possibility of there being changelings on Cardassia or on Earth or on Kronos or wherever out of the equation, and the situation still remains what you do when you have one group, the Klingons, with whom you are allies, but it's never the warmest. You know, we're allies with them, but it's not like we're close. It's not like humans and Vulcans or something like that. You have this sort of uneasy peace with them. You have a treaty with them. You do cooperate, but there's always under the surface, there's this lingering distrust and animosity there. But you also know from a geopolitical standpoint that maintaining that alliance is important.
Yep.
And so you want to maintain it. Then you've got this other group, the Cardassians, with whom you are enemies. You're not in a hot war with them, but you did fight them in the past. And you're orbiting, you're near a planet. They moved the station, so not orbiting anymore, but you're near a planet that had been occupied by these people, and you're there to repair the damage. and try to bring Bajor into the Federation. And yet you're put in a position where you know that if the Klingons go to Cardassia, they're going to kill millions of people, innocent people who have nothing to do with the military, government, the occupation, anything like that. And because of the values of the Federation, you want to avoid that bloodshed. Mm-hmm. You want to help those people. So what do you do? You know, you're put in this position of having to make a choice based on your values and ethics, and you know that the consequences of that could actually lead to even greater losses, greater bloodshed, and what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what I like about this too is that there are no easy answers.
Right.
And I think that's something that is really nice about this series in general, is that we're not going to give the characters an easy way out.
Yeah.
And I think that's smart to do that when we're doing Deep Space Nine. That's yeah. where I think Star Trek is at its best, is when we're not left to be able to say, oh, well, we can just immediately, like, you know, it's easy. Mm-hmm. Like, no, it's fine. You know, we can get out of this. It makes it much more realistic, because in all honesty and frustratingly, that is the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the real world. And that's the defining characteristic of Deep Space Nine, is that there is no easy answer. And mm-hmm. when you're presented with an answer or decision, you know, Sisko makes his decision here. You can sit around and debate whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision. So many things happen in yep. this episode, in the series overall, where it's not clear cut. And I might think that this is the right decision, but you might think, no, that was wrong. This is the right decision. And then you can explain to me why you feel that way. And I can think, yeah, okay, I can see it from that perspective. That's something that DS9 does. And in TNG, TOS, so often, the decision that our heroes make is clearly the right decision.
Right.
Not always, but that's sort of the main method of storytelling in those series, is the morality tale of here's what's right and here's what's wrong, and here we were presented with this problem and we solved it and we helped these people. And it's so great that we were able to come in and make that decision and make everything okay. And the real world usually doesn't work that way. And Deep Space Nine takes us down the more realistic path. And in this story in particular, Sisko is really faced with, you know, he has to quickly make a decision. He doesn't really have time. There's no time for the Federation Council to really debate
right.
and figure out what they're going to do. You've got to make a decision in real time. And so you have a lot of responsibility, and you might make the right decision, you might make the wrong decision. Mm-hmm. And here, you know, there clearly are. In the end, Gowron stands down. In the end, things are, they don't go back to the way they were before.
Right.
But at least the fighting has stopped.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, quite a few people get injured or killed. There's damage, a lot of damage to the station. Klingons lost many ships. The Cardassians lose colonies. The Klingons mm-hmm. don't want to give these colonies back at the end. There are a lot of repercussions to that decision.
Yeah. Well, and we have destabilized the entire Alpha Quadrant at this point now. We've ruined a relationship between two major powers, and we've, you know, strained relationships in general through three major powers. And so, I mean, yeah, regardless of the fact that, you know, that we do get the Klingons kind of backing down here, they don't back all the way down. And this is going to continue to be a problem now from now on in this season. We're going to have to continue to deal with the repercussions of the choices the Klingons made here. By not listening to their own, and this is the thing, it, you know, the Klingons take it as, oh, you're not listening to us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but at the same time, you're not listening to us either, right? Like, as the Federation, we're supposed to be allies. We're supposed to talk together. Like, if you have this feeling or if you have this intel or whatever, well then let's work to figure this out. And even when faced with the actual evidence, the actual scientific proof, right? That mm-hmm. the leaders of the Cardassians are not changelings. They're like, whatever. It doesn't matter. It'll be better off if we're in control. And it's just like, wow, that's also so much of, you know, our world today. Like, it's all about politics, and it's not really about the truth. It's not about science. It's just about different political realities, you know? And I think, you know, that's kind of where we end up in this episode. And it's really fascinating because that desire for control and for political power is what's going to hurt, obviously, the Klingon Empire, the Cardassian Empire, and it's going to make it obviously much easier for the changelings to finally completely infiltrate the Alpha Quadrant and, you know, give us the rest of Deep Space Nine's story.
Yeah. Let's talk about another choice that's made in this episode, and that's Worf having to choose between the Empire and the Federation. And also, he's choosing between the path his life is going to take. Does he stay in Starfleet or does he leave?
I really like us getting the opportunity to explore this with Worf. And what I love here is that, you know, we've seen all these different people kind of being driven by fear. And in many ways, Worf kind of has this same thing, right? Like, he's kind of being driven by fear. Fear of never fully being Klingon enough, or never being human enough, always being stuck in the middle, instead of just being mm-hmm. who he is. And I think what I love is that Sisko basically being able to say, running away isn't going to solve your problems. Wherever you go, there you are. And I'm sorry you're having to make a choice between your people and the Federation. But what we see here is Worf chooses just to do what's right. He chooses to stay mm-hmm. on the side of people that are doing what's right. But he also makes this as an opportunity for growth himself. You know, he gets off the security track and he ends up on command to choose a new path, to forge a new destiny for himself. And in much the same way, I mean, you know, Sisko did, and again, this is where those parallels kind of come back full circle with Emissary, where Sisko charted a new direction for himself and his son. You know, Worf does that for himself here. And I really love the opportunity for that character now to kind of move beyond the character that we saw in The Next Generation, who is really just always being told no all the time or being used as the person that we're going to beat up Worf so you know how strong these aliens are.
Exactly,
we're
going right.
to deal with him as an actual person who has emotional, physical, mental, spiritual, all of these sides to him, and we're going to deal with all of them in this show. And this is a great way to start. An existential crisis, mm-hmm. an answer, and a movement from one place to the next, physically from Enterprise to Deep Space Nine, but also you just kind of like, there is that metaphorical moving of being on the security track, which is quite different than being on the command track. He's going to have a lot to learn, and I'm going to get to see this character progress, which is really cool.
Yeah. I think the command track is a lot more interesting for his personality because he is going to face challenges
yes.
that I think are more difficult for him because of mm-hmm. his background and the way he thinks than he does on the security track. And so it is a much better opportunity for him to grow as a person. So I think the switch to command was really good.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I was also thinking that we were talking about how he tells Sisko that the Dominion threat has given my people the excuse to do what they were always born to do. So they just have this drive, they have this instinct to fight and to conquer. And I think that in contrast to that, Worf choosing between the Federation and the Klingon Empire, he grew up on Earth. He wants to be, we see this throughout The Next Generation, you know, he wants to be in touch with his people, with Klingons. I think it's this longing of knowing that he came from this place, but he grew up elsewhere, and he wants to reconnect with those roots. But I don't necessarily think that his instincts inside are Klingon in the same way as what we see with Gowron, Martok, all these other Klingons that we see who want to go and invade Cardassia. So maybe to me, the fact that he would, the fact that he struggles between the two worlds, I totally get, because I'm caught like that too. You know, I'm American. I grew up in the US, but I've lived half my life, in almost my whole adult life, in Japan. And I often feel caught between cultures. And I know what that kind of struggle, mm-hmm. internal feeling is like. And so I get that. But I think this choice for him might be easier than some people would take it as being on the surface, because he's purely Klingon. So you might think that instinct to choose the Klingon side would be really strong. But I think that he knows inside, and Sisko brings it out of him near the end, that really the Federation, Starfleet, Earth, that's his home, and that's where he really belongs.
Well, and I think what it goes to show is that just because you're born a certain way, right? Like, you know, he's born a Klingon, but he is raised by humans, and he's raised with their values, and he kind of finds a good way of kind of being a melting pot between the two. And here it's really clear, like, that Worf is going to begin to forge his own destiny into who he is, right? But he's chosen what the thing that he believes is right, that he believes is true. And that truth that he has decided to follow are the values of the Federation over the values of the of Klingons. I think that's a really interesting thing here. And I do, it's so interesting to me to, because it's Michael Dorn playing this character, to have this arc for him. Mm-hmm. And because I think, just when I think of what that character would be called by others in our world, when we kind of think about racial divides, he would be called some really terrible names by people for choosing against his own race. And I think it's a really beautiful way of showing us that he's no less a Klingon for choosing to not do every single thing that Klingons do and choosing something different. And I don't want to get too in the weeds on that, but I feel like that's something I was just thinking about, how beautiful that actually is in today's world as I watch this episode. And the message of it is pretty astounding, actually.
Yeah, I feel like it's something that we maybe at one point had a little bit better understanding of, and it's fading a little bit right now. Maybe it'll come back, but yeah, there's a lot of tug of war on that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I feel, again, you know, being an outcast of sorts, you know, because I live in a country where I am by far a tiny, tiny minority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know very much what feels like to be in that situation.
Yeah.
And I think that it goes misunderstood, and a lot of assumptions are made in the world today.
Yeah.
Uninformed assumptions.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, people misunderstand that there aren't many people who feel like that, you know. And I think you yourself are a perfect example of that. There are more than just one type of people that that have those feelings and those experiences, right? I think, and it's important for us to be able to have those conversations and understand that. And that's a part of like understanding who we are as human beings, that we're not all just lumped into categories. We're all individual, unique. And by treating us that, and this is what happens with Klingons, right? And this is what happens in Star Trek. We just kind of like lump everybody together as like, oh, well, you're the Klingons. Yeah. Oh, you're this.
You're the Klingon.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the beauty of Worf here, is that he allows us to be able to explore. And we were kind of talking about last time, we're going to explore with Martok. What does it mean to be Klingon? What we see with the Cardassians, what they do with the show, what they do with the Bajorans in Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine does us all a favor by helping us see nuance in the people that we interact with.
Yeah, and that sums it up perfectly. Yeah. Well, we've reached the end of our recap of The Way of the Warrior. There are a lot of small points that we could talk about. We'll probably do those in some future episodes of The Ore, but we would love to hear your thoughts on the overall Way of the Warrior and the things that we discussed today. There are many ways for you to do that. A great way is to join the Babel Conference, our closed listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field, and it should come right up. If not, just type the whole name. And it is a closed group, so if you're not yet a member, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You can also send us email if you go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose The Orb, and that'll come to Matthew and me by email. And of course, you can find us on Twitter and everywhere in social media under the username TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not, you know, debating whether you want to switch from command track to security to medical or maybe to the masseuse track, where can people find you?
Well, of course, you can find me all over the place under the moniker MattRushing02. Instagram, Letterboxd, Twitter, Vero, Goodreads, all of those places you can find me. So, of course, you can also find me running our 602 Club account here on Twitter, too, doing our whole other side of the network. We've got the 602 Club, which we get to talk about all of those fandoms that aren't Star Trek related, which is super fun. And, of course, you can find the bonus shows I do there as well with John Mills, Snyder Cuts, and Assembling Avengers. Along with that, doing Literary Treks, which is the books and the comics show here about Star Trek. And Chris, you and I on Warp 5, we've been celebrating 20 years of Star Trek Enterprise together by walking through all of the episodes, which is a lot of fun. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, please check me out on a couple of shows. One is called Outpost. I did that with Drea Kaufman. It's a Finnish show all about Harry Potter. And we talked about every single chapter of that series. And then the aforementioned John Mills and I talk about Star Wars over on Aggressive Negotiations. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out, do you want the red shoulder pads or the yellow shoulder pads to go with your outfit, where can people find you?
Yeah, I decided I'm just going to go with all three. I'm going to have like the Wesley Crusher and have all three colors right there across
the
top.
Very nice.
Yeah, I'm on the undecided track. At this point. So. But you can find me elsewhere on the network. Of course, you mentioned Warp 5, where we're talking about Star Trek Enterprise. We're going through each episode doing a rewatch, and we're about 15 episodes in at this point in season one. So that's been great fun. Of course, from time to time, I pop up on Literary Treks with you there. Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room, and I have some other things going, and also back catalog. You can find me on all sorts of shows. So tune in if you want to hear my thoughts across the entire spectrum of Star Trek series. And otherwise, I'm working on some things behind the scenes and hope to get those rolled out here early in 2022 for everyone. And if you'd like to chat with me about Star Trek or anything else, I'd be happy to hear from you on Twitter. That's where I'm most active. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere on social media. But Twitter is where I'm most active, and I'd love to hear from you there. If you'd like to help us keep this show and the 602 Club and everything else that we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help through Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find out how to get involved in the network, how to help, how to support what we're doing, and help us keep everything going. We could definitely use your help So thank you to everyone who is helping us there. We really could not do this without you. Well, Matthew, it's been great fun talking about the Way of the Warrior with you, and I'm looking forward to opening many more orbs with you in 2022.
Well, Chris, it's so exciting to be back here with the Orb, and we want to thank you for joining us for all these years, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.